Welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Stories of Determination. I'm your host, Betsy Graziani Fassbender. Like in nature, we see determined flowers and vines clinging to life and seeking light, so are Morning Glory people. And in this podcast, I'll interview writers, activists, artists, entrepreneurs, survivors and thrivers, and trailblazers of all kinds. These are folks that have been determined to get over, under, around, and through the obstacles that face them, or to seize the opportunities that come before them. I find these people inspiring and amazing. I know you will too. So today I welcome to the Morning Glory Project, Donna Cameron. Donna spent her career as a business owner, working with nonprofit organizations and causes. She served them as an executive, consultant, trainer, and volunteer. It was there that she saw kindness in action on a daily basis and was awed by its power to transform. While she's considered herself a reasonably nice person with the occasional lapse into bitchiness, she knew that true kindness was a step above. When she committed to a year-long deep dive into kindness, she learned that it takes practice, patience, and understanding, and a sense of humor helps too. Her book, A Year of Living Kindly, has earned more than a dozen awards and is now in its fourth printing with foreign language versions in production. And Donna lives with her husband in the Pacific Northwest. Welcome, Donna Cameron, to the Morning Glory Project. I'm so happy you're here today.
Thank you, Betsy. It's a delight to be with you. Thanks so much.
Well, congratulations on the success of this book. And I'm going to start with what's going to seem like a simple question, but what is kindness?
Well, I don't know if that is a simple question.
I kind of figured it wasn't, but
I think as at its simplest, kindness is really extending yourself. It's going outside your comfort zone. It's thinking about the person you're interacting with. It's going beyond simply nice. It's caring about the encounter you're going to have with someone and taking a risk that your gesture might be misunderstood or rejected. Kindness makes you vulnerable.
Well, I want to come back to that, but how do you see kindness and being nice as different? Because I think a lot of people think of those as synonyms.
And for a lot of people, I think they probably are. It's probably a semantic difference, but I really see a vast difference between the two. I was raised to be a nice person, and that really did not stretch me very much. I think being kind does take a stretch. I can be nice and still make judgments about people. I can still be impatient with them. I can really still just merely tolerate someone and be nice to them, sort of with my teeth gritted and a false smile on. I can be nice and not particularly care about if the other person is getting what they need out of the interaction. But I don't think I can be kind and do any of those things. Kind asks me to suspend judgment about people. It asks me to really make an effort to connect and to care. And then it asks me not to be indifferent. Kindness requires some courage.
So it sounds in a way, again, I guess because I'm a word person too, I'm playing with the word a little bit. Kind, I mean, nice almost sounds like a synonym for polite. You know, that one can be nice and polite and say the socially appropriate things and not be vulgar or whatever it might be. That might be nice. But the kindness is about the connection with others. And like you said, sort of making oneself more vulnerable.
I think that's exactly it. Yeah, I often refer to just the two words, extend yourself, as the difference between kind and nice.
Well, do you think that nice is sort of what I would have called in my earlier years, my tendency to be a people pleaser, to not offend, to not make anyone unhappy, to not ruffle any feathers, so it wasn't so risky?
I think that's very true. Yeah. I suspect a lot of us had parents who said, now be nice, you know, when you're going to go play with another child, mm-hmm. or you're entering a social situation where your parents don't want you to embarrass them, be nice. But that's all they're asking. They're really not asking you to go out of your way and care about what the other person in the encounter is hoping to get out of it.
It almost sounds like they're saying, be small. Don't be a problem.
Maybe it could be that. I don't know. I don't think that's deliberately what they mean, but I think it's often a code word for don't do anything that's going to embarrass me.
Right. The reason I wanted to talk with you today, because I know that this has always been true throughout history. If we go back to medieval times, I'm sure not everybody was kind, but it seems that we're in an especially unkind time.
Oh, yes.
Not just because of COVID and the hostilities about that, but our political climate, our world climate, there just seems to be, and the social media world where people have sort of keyboard courage and they get to spill out a little bit more than they might have in other, when we lacked such media. Does it seem to you that we're in an especially unkind time?
Absolutely. We're in the midst of an epidemic of incivility. I would say, it's been going on for a while, but it really became epidemic, I would say, starting in probably about mid 2016, mm-hmm. when the presidential upcoming election spurred some really bad behavior and people started accepting it. And I don't use the word epidemic lightly, particularly at this time when we're in the midst of a true health pandemic. But rudeness and incivility are contagious, just like a virus, just like the coronavirus. If we experience rudeness, we're more likely to be rude in our next encounters. And it's not just a matter of someone being rude to us and then we being rude, but even if we just witness rude behavior, it causes us to behave more rudely. And Lord knows we are witnessing rude behavior every day, both in the news, in our interactions, and also, as you mentioned, on social media, and we're tolerating it. It's about to get worse, I think, as we enter another season of campaigning, as we all suit up for the next election.
Well, it also seems that unkindness or incivility, as you call it, it seems to me that it's contagious in two ways. One is the kind of kick the dog way. If I've been treated unkindly, then I'm crabby and I treat the next person unkindly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it also seems that it seems the other kind of contagion that I seem to be observing, and you tell me if this is how you see it too, it also seems that unkindness seems to give license for more unkindness. It seems to endorse it. And yes, sometimes from the leadership and political climate, but also even just in families. It's sort of like if dad is rude and nasty, then somehow I think that's okay to be rude and nasty.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's how kids learn. They learn from what their parents and the adults around them are modeling. So if that's what they're seeing, that's what they're going to pick up, and they're not ever going to, I won't say not ever, but they're not going to realize that that's not optimal behavior. That's not how we best interact with one another and create a world where people are civil to one another and respectful. But there is good news on this, Betsy, and that's that kindness is just as contagious as incivility or rudeness. So it works the same way. If someone treats us kindly, we're much more likely to be kind in our next encounters. And even if we just witness kindness, we're likely to be kind in our next encounters.
To be inspired to be kind?
Well, yeah, yeah, yeah. When you look at it and realize that both are equally contagious, then we have a choice in every interaction we make. Do we want to further a world of finger pointing and out shouting the other guy and disrespect, or do we want to further a world of compassion and sharing and caring and respect?
Hmm. Well, so tell me about your year of living kindly. What was that, and how what did you discover? What did you learn about yourself and about kindness and others in general?
Well, at the beginning of 2015, I set an intention of really cultivating kindness and also researching it. I'm sort of nerdy, so I love to do research from fourth grade when I had to do my my first big report on the California missions. I have always just loved digging in and doing research. So for me, that meant not just thinking about my own interactions or what I was seeing, but trying to find out what the science was saying about kindness. Being kind is an intention that I've had for a long time. And, you know, as you said in my intro, it's not that I was, you know, a bitch or anything, but I think there were times when I simply just settled for nice and let the intention of going out of my comfort zone to be kind fall by the wayside. I was building my company at the time, and so I had long hours and stresses. So in 2015, I decided to hold my feet to the fire and blog about kindness. And I invited a few friends to follow the blog, thinking that if I allowed it then to by May 15th or March 15th to fall by the wayside, that would be a pretty noticeable, pretty visible failure. So that kept me accountable. And I was diligent about exploring kindness and sharing what I was learning during that year. Kindness was just always on my radar. So sometimes I would share something I had observed about the difficulty in extending a kindness or a particular skill of kindness, like gratitude or curiosity or learning to receive kindness, which is a challenge for many of us. And other times I would share a piece of research that I had discovered about, you know, a university in British Columbia doing research showing that kindness alleviates social anxiety. So for me, it was just a really rich year of learning and practicing and experiencing and having plenty of lapses. I'm never going to be a paragon of kindness, but it was just such a rich year that brought me so much joy. And the blog, a lot of people started following it and engaging, and it turned out to be this lovely community of kind people who were really interested in understanding and spreading kindness. So what started out as a one-year experiment or one-year intention, I learned really early on that it's not something that I would just commit to for a year and then move on to a year of learning conversational Italian or salsa dancing or something.
Well, it's almost like if somebody goes onto a health regime and they think they're going to do it for a short time and then they realize it's a lifestyle that they need to embrace.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, can you give me a specific example of how you did something that maybe once would have been nice enough, but became kindness when you learned to expand it?
Well, let's see. Just one small story that comes to mind is I was checking into a lovely resort in the San Diego area for a conference I was attending, and the woman in front of me was just incredibly rude to the check-in clerk and was complaining that they wouldn't upgrade her, and there was nothing she was happy about, and she just tore into this fellow, and I was standing behind her absolutely appalled and embarrassed to be a fellow human. And when she left, I went up and just tried to turn that around. I mean, he was a very professional person and clearly had handled disgruntled people before. But I just tried to tell him how professionally he had handled it and how I admired that, and also that, oh, I'm so looking forward to staying at the resort. It's so beautiful, and I know I'm going to have a fabulous stay. And so I went into that. It's a very small thing, but with the intention of using kindness to turn around a situation that that had been disturbing.
So to be nice in that circumstance would have been simply to have had a polite exchange with him on your own behalf and just ignored it, perhaps. But to be kind is to extend it and to congratulate him for his own patience and to then add on by saying, by being somebody with whom he got to have a pleasant exchange.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's small, and that's, I think of most kindnesses as very small things. I mean, certainly there are huge kindnesses that, you know, you can endow a wing of a hospital or something like that, or you know, go off into the wild and take care of endangered animals. But most of us can't do that sort of thing. We realize that the kindnesses, our day-to-day kindnesses, are the really small things. They're the making eye contact with someone or sharing a genuine compliment with them, allowing a car to merge on the road.
That's what I'd like to see more of.
Yeah, I think we all would. And a lot of us don't do those things because they feel puny. We think, well, what's it going to matter if I say good morning to the barista or if I make an effort to greet my coworkers when I get into the office? But really, those things matter hugely, and they affect how the other person's going to respond to their day. They're really easy things to do, but you know what? They're also really easy things not to do.
Mm. Well, I like this idea of puny kindnesses that I can, because I think that a lot of folks look at those grand gestures of kindness, you know, like you say, endowing a hospital or adopting foster children or, you know, doing something really big. And not that those things aren't wonderful and that if we're capable, we can stretch to do what we can do. But those of us who either don't have those means or don't have those capacities, the small, little, momentary day-to-day kindnesses add up, no?
Oh, they do. I don't think there's such a thing as a small kindness because we just don't know how far it's going to ripple out. Even a smile to someone who's having a bad day or having a neutral day, if it causes them to then be nice to the next person who's then nice to the next person, we don't know where that might lead to the huge gesture, the gesture that really helps someone who's having a terrible day and you know, thinking dark thoughts. Hmm. I call them micro kindnesses. And there's an author, John Blakey, who wrote a wonderful book called The Trusted Executive, who calls them TNTs, or tiny noticeable things. Hmm. I love that.
I like that too. And, you know, it's funny because TNT, of course, is a bomb, right?
Yeah.
It's explosive. And I think of it in its negative sense, you know, like you say, those micro kindnesses, those little things, you never know if that just might be the thing that would turn somebody's day around or change their attitude or restore their faith. But it also seems true in its opposite, which is if we're doing microaggressions, if we're doing slights and little uglinesses to one another, we don't know the person that's receiving that, how much damage it could be doing too.
Exactly. Exactly.
Wow. So you say that you're not a paragon of kindness, but you seem like a pretty kind person to me. So this kindness thing, is it, I think that some people think that you have to do it perfectly and all the time.
Oh, I don't think there's anyone who does it perfectly and all the time, and that probably includes Mother Teresa and the Dalai Lama. I'm sure they had bad days too. It's just a matter of being aware and doing better. I encourage people who ask how to commit to kindness not to just say, oh, I'm turning over a new leaf and starting tomorrow, I'm going to be the kindest person on the block. To think about it and say, what could I do that's 5 or 10% kinder? How could I just be a bit kinder? And then focus on that. And sometimes it's simple things like paying attention. I think a lot of us fail to see the kindness opportunities around us. We may not notice when someone's extending us a kindness, or we don't notice that there's somebody behind us whose arms are full of packages that we could hold a door for. A child in the supermarket who's having a meltdown who really just wants some attention. There's so many little things that we don't notice, because sometimes it's because we're involved in our own devices, our smartphone or whatever.
Or sometimes just in a hurry.
Yeah, in a hurry, or our own internal drama. So there's so many little skills of kindness like that. Engaging your curiosity when somebody does behave badly, instead of immediately responding in sort of a knee-jerk fashion and, you know, giving as good as you got, thinking, I wonder if there's something else happening that I don't know, or if there's a misunderstanding, or that person might be carrying a really heavy load and I need to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, you know, I sometimes wonder about that, because a little practice I've been experimenting with since reading about you and learning what you're doing is trying to, when I see somebody being what I would call a giant jerk, when they're being a giant stinker to somebody, and my immediate reaction is to say, oh, what a jerk, what an SOB, right? I mean, I go to those naughty places in my mind where I have names for people that behave in such ways. And some of those are bigotries on the basis of what population I think they might belong to, what age group, what gender, what political party, whatever it might be. But I've been kind of experimenting with thinking, if I watch somebody being unkind to a grocery clerk in your earlier example, because that's come up a lot lately in this time of COVID with the masks, and sometimes people are impatient because the products they want aren't there. And I witnessed one of those where somebody was quite a lot of a stinker to the clerk. And instead of going right to jerk, I thought, you know, maybe he's caring for somebody who's on a respirator at home. Or not on a respirator, but on oxygen at home. Maybe he's really freaked out right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I try to pretend that. And that doesn't mean he's also not a jerk in other environments. He may very well be. But I try to have the assumption of understanding. Try to. I'm not saying I always get there. But I'm a pretty flawed person. I do go to those assumptive places.
Well, I think we all do. And it's a matter of not necessarily acting on it. Just because somebody else is behaving like a jerk doesn't mean we have to. So we can see it and maybe even make a judgment in our heads. But then if we don't act on it, don't say something to the person, don't let it make us unkind, we've made a good step toward kindness.
Well, I guess you're kind of turning that avenue of unkindness into a cul-de-sac instead of a freeway, right?
I mean, oh, I like that.
Yeah, kind of ending it off a little bit in some ways. I'm curious also, you talked about there needing to be vulnerability. It's vulnerable and courageous to be kind. Can you say a bit about that?
When we extend a kindness to someone, we don't know what their reaction is going to be.
And it's not always thank you so much.
It's not always thank you so much. I remember reading a little story about a fellow who said, I'm through offering my seat on the bus to people. I've offered 6 times and nobody took me up on it. And several people glared at me and others were insulted that I thought they needed it. So I'm just through. So that's a small example, but I think people are sometimes hurt by other people's reactions. And we, of course, live in a country where we're raised to be independent and, you know, lift ourselves up by our own bootstraps. So sometimes people refuse something that they really do need, or they refuse a gift or even a compliment. And then the person, the giver, feels stupid or embarrassed or resentful. And you just have to let those things roll off your back. You have to say, I'm choosing kindness, and if this person chooses not to accept it, it's not a reflection on me. It's just where they are, and I will accept that. But that takes some courage, and it also takes courage to stand up for somebody who's being marginalized or being mistreated. I remember being in a, this was some months ago, being in a doctor's office, and the receptionist was, I'm sure, having a really bad day and very frustrated, but she was dealing with an elderly person who, for whom English wasn't the first language. And she was very short and very rude, and the person was getting flustered and looked like she was about to start crying. And I just went up and stood next to her and said, "Can I help?" And they both just sort of got kinder.
Well, it's disarming, isn't it?
It is. It is. I think it's sometimes what we need is somebody to point out to us that we've let something escalate that we don't want to, or to just give us an opportunity to pause. Pausing, I think, is the biggest skill of kindness, and it's such a simple thing, pausing, but a lot of us don't do it.
Well, Donna, I have so much to think about, so much to think about, because like you, I mean, I'm a pretty nice person. I've always thought I was a nice enough person, but I want to extend, I want to grow in this way. And if you were going to tell somebody, give somebody a couple of steps for the first few steps for expanding their own levels of kindness, aside from just sort of those pleasantries at the grocery counter, are there other applications that you think that people can start with?
Oh gosh, where to start on this one? I think practicing some phrases that you might be able to use when your buttons are pushed, it's really a good idea to sort of have them in your pocket and know what you might want to say. And how you say it is as important as what you say. But if you encounter someone who's really rude to you or says something nasty, employ that pause and then try to say something like, "It sounds like you're really having a bad day," or "These are tough times. I get it." Or "I'm sorry if," even saying, "I'm sorry if I offended you," even if you don't think you did, why not? Why not apologize?
Yeah, what does it cost?
It doesn't cost anything. And saying it, you know, with being able to say it without that superiority or that sense of, "I'm saying this to put you in your place," that takes some practice. And then the other thing I would say, when you enter a room, enter a situation, a social thing, pause and think to yourself, what's the kind response here? How can I extend kindness? Thinking about maybe the other person before yourself.
Well, it sounds like it's got a lot to do with empathy and sensitivity and observance.
Yes.
Tuning in. But it also sounds like you're saying that the kindness should be customized. In other words, yes, you're going to have these sort of general observations or kind of, like you said, get some phrases that are comfortable. But what one person might find kind, another person might find insulting. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense to tune in and be sensitive to that person. One person might be complimented by, you know, making a, you know, saying, "Oh, that's a beautiful dress," or whatever. And somebody else might find that really intrusive. Mm-hmm. And so being willing to correct if you step wrongly with somebody and change that behavior, not keep doing that thing that you think is kind, but they don't experience as kindness. You know, with, I mean, I think that that's some of, I'm not talking about sexual assault, of course, but some men, I think, in the Me Too movement are confused. Like, gosh, I thought I was just being nice. I thought I was just giving a compliment, and now it feels like it's a hurtful thing. I'm not talking about when somebody's inappropriate or vulgar or any of that, of course. But I think that some people are confused. So this idea of kind of customizing your kindness and observing the response that it gets too.
Exactly. It is something that takes practice, and we're not always going to get it right. But the more we practice it, the better we get at it, and the more it becomes sort of our default setting.
Hmm.
But we're never going to get it right, and there are always going to be times when we don't notice, or we just miss an opportunity, or we're too lazy. Interestingly, I read something just very recently about how children and adults have a really different response to kindness. When we're younger, we're much more concerned about fitting in and not embarrassing ourselves. So we hesitate as children to extend a kindness out of fear. Fear of being judged, of being laughed at, of drawing unwanted attention. I guess really it's fear of being different. You know, when you're kids, that's really important. But as adults, we probably still fear having our kindness rejected, but we're much more likely to say, oh, I just don't have time. Mm-hmm. Or we don't notice because we're so involved in whatever else is going on in our heads or in our devices. I think we care less as adults about what people think of us, but we're busy. And frankly, we're lazy and oblivious.
Well, there's lots to think about here, Donna. And I think that the best way to get started in this, of course, is by reading your beautiful book, A Year of Living Kindly, by Donna Cameron. Lots to learn here and lots to think about. That's, you know, I've often said that evil, there's a lot more kindness in the world than there is evil, but evil seems to have a better publicist. You know, it just seems to show up in the news, in dramas, and you know, all of that. It shows up so much, so many more places. So maybe it's about kind of turning our attention to and observing kindness in a lovely way too.
I like that. Yes, I think kindnesses tend to not be as loud or as obvious, but they're all around us.
Well, thank you so much, Donna, for being part of the Morning Glory Project and for sharing A Year of Living Kindly with us. I hope that you experience some kindness in your world today. And thank you so much for sharing yours with us.
Thank you, Betsy. It was delightful to be with you. Thanks so much.
It's been a bit since I recorded my conversation with Donna Cameron, and I've waited to record this little Extra Bloom section for a while because I needed to really think about and feel and experience what she talked about. Because this notion of kindness gets mistaken, I think, for what we called niceness, right? Being polite. And I believe that in these tumultuous times, it's really important to remember that kindness is not passivity, and that kindness doesn't erase anger or frustration or the craving for justice or the need to resist forces that are inappropriate for our country, for our communities, for our families, for ourselves as individuals. That we can be kind and still be active and still oppose forces that we're against. I loved what Donna talked about micro kindnesses, just those small little moments of exchange. And I had one of these. I was in a grocery store with my mask on, with my gloves on, with my hand sanitizer, all of those things that we're required to do these days. And my credit card didn't work in the machine for whatever silly reason, so I had to go to the customer service counter. And when I did, I encountered a woman who was the manager of the store, and she wasn't wearing a mask, and I felt instantly enraged, and I wanted to shout, and I wanted to say, are you kidding me? I wore a mask in here, and you know, I just felt so angry. And then all of a sudden, I checked myself. I thought about what Donna said and think about her experience. And so I decided to come at it from kindness instead of anger. So I said to her, please forgive me. We don't know each other, but I'm concerned about your not wearing a mask. And I expected her to be angry and defensive and frustrated at me. And she all of a sudden went, Oh my gosh, thank you. I had it on all day. I just had a break and I forgot to put it back on. I'm so sorry. And she rushed, literally rushed back into her office to put it back on. Now, not every exchange is going to go that way. Sometimes people are going to get angry at us, even if we're kind. But I think that it's important to remember that kindness is going to increase the odds of a positive exchange. I loved also when Donna talked about just committing to being 5 to 10% kinder. I rather like that idea. I think I could manage 5 to 10%. I don't know if I could manage 100%, but I'm working on it. That's a lot of extra blooms for today. Looking for those puny kinds of micro kindnesses out there and how you can be part of them. I wish to each of you listening every comfort that you can find, every joy that you can muster, and moments of peace and quiet. And most of all, I thank you for listening to the Morning Glory Project, and I hope that wherever you are, however you feel, whatever environment you find yourself in, that you find a way to bloom.